You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And next on KBOO, your community radio station, a radio zine, a conversation with Jill Fritz, a senior director in the Wildlife Protection Department at the Humane Society of the United States, and she works with a team that advances legislative and regulatory policy. They do amazing work at protecting wildlife, our fellow beings, the animals that inhabit our ecosystems. Interview conducted by Ender Black, Public Affairs Director at KBOO.
This morning, we have Jill Fritz, who works for the Humane Society. What about if you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, I am the Senior Director for Wildlife Protection at the Humane Society of the United States. And me and my team work mainly on issues surrounding protecting our nation's large carnivores. So wolves, mountain lions, bears, grizzly bears, black bears, bobcats, coyotes, foxes. And we work to protect these very important ecologically vital large carnivores from cruel practices like trophy hunting, wildlife killing contests, trapping, and the fur trade.
Tell us about the work that you've been doing recently, a very important work here in Oregon. And you were here, you're not in Oregon, you live in
Minnesota.
Minnesota, and that's
where it's currently -5 degrees.
A little chilly.
Yeah.
So you were in Oregon just last week, being an activist. Yeah, please tell us about what you've done here and the good news about the measures that have been passed. And yeah.
Yes, I was in Oregon because on Friday, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission voted to begin a rulemaking process to prohibit wildlife killing contests in Oregon, or specifically coyote killing contests in Oregon. And let me tell you a little bit about what those are, because sometimes there's some confusion. But wildlife killing contests are organized events in which participants compete for cash and prizes, sometimes equipment, even weapons, for killing the most or the largest or even the smallest animals within a specified time period, usually 1 or 2 days. So the contests themselves might be judged on how many animals are killed, or by their weight or their combined weight, or even characteristics like the biggest ears or the prettiest female. Sometimes when you see these contests advertised, you'll see judging for the big dog or the little dog, or big cat or little cat, meaning the biggest or smallest coyote or bobcat, or even mountain lions are targeted in some states. So killing contests usually begin with a registration on a Friday night or a Saturday morning. And then the participants, they will pay a registration fee to take part in it. And it can range from $50 to $100 or more per person or per team to participate. Then after they register, they go out and begin the killing. And it usually happens over 1 or 2 days. And then at the during the contest, participants will often use what are called electronic calling devices that mimic the sound of coyotes or even their young, or foxes or other animals in distress. So that will lure these shy animals in for an easy shot rather than gunned down. And then at the end of the usually 1 or 2 day period, participants gather at what they call the weigh-in or the check-in, where the animals or the bodies are counted or weighed, depending on the criteria, and then the cash prizes are awarded. After the contest is over, the bodies are of little or no use at all to the participants, and they can just be dumped like trash. In investigations that we have done in states like New York State, coyotes killed in a contest were actually seen in a dumpster next to the contest check-in. So Sometimes there might be raffles or door prizes at the contest, including weapons and equipment. Even AR-15 rifles have been given away in some states. And depending on state law, even sports-style betting will be allowed on the participants themselves in the contest. So, as you can see, these are just really wasteful, unethical, unsporting events, and that are also damaging to the reputation of responsible sportsmen and sportswomen in the state. So on last Friday, a group of wildlife protection and humane organizations had petitioned the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to take up this rule and to take up this issue and join the 8 other U.S. states that have already banned this practice. And fortunately, the commission decided to do so, to begin that process of making a rule to ban killing contests in Oregon. So that was very exciting.
Yeah, that is very good news. And it's just, it's really amazing for a lot of people that consider themselves animal activists or just animal lovers to accept that these are situations that keep taking place in America. It's not just Oregon, it's all over the country. And a lot of people believe that these are things that only happen in other countries, you know, like China. China has a really bad rep when it comes to treatment of animals. But the fact is that, yes, they do. They do terrible things over there, but we do too in many different ways. Where do you see where we're heading in this regard, this basically banning of these barbaric contests?
I do believe that we will see an end to this practice of wildlife killing contests in the not too distant future. Like I mentioned already, 8 U.S. states have banned wildlife killing contests, beginning with California in 2014, Vermont in 2018, and then in 2019, there was almost a flood of bans. New Mexico, then Arizona, and then Massachusetts. Then in 2020, Colorado and Washington State, Oregon's neighbor, also prohibited these killing contests. And then most recently, the state of Maryland passed a bill through its legislature with a landslide vote in 2021 to prohibit killing contests there. But the important thing to think about here, and we saw this just happen in Oregon, is that in most of those states that I mentioned, it was the state wildlife commissions themselves. You know, traditionally these commissions are really focused on hunting and many of those states said, you know, not only are these killing contests cruel or unethical, they're also very damaging to our reputation as a state. You know, if we want to present our hunters as ethical sportsmen and sportswomen, if we want to show that we care about conservation and protecting our wildlife from unnecessary killing, then this is something that we want to do within our state wildlife commission. And that's what the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission did too. But that's a long way of answering your question, which was I do believe we're headed in the right direction, that states around the country, many other states are also considering this issue currently. So I think it's just going to continue to pick up steam and pick up momentum, and more states will get rid of this really shameful blood sport.
Yeah, it is very shameful. And I typically think about children, like the people that participate in these events. They have children. So that type of activity, and how do you explain that to children? Like, what would be your advice, you know, if you were to talk to somebody about this issue with kids that have experienced this? Typically, we know that kids tend to not hate animals. That's typical. Kids typically just love animals, and they feel this connection that is very, very beautiful. Like, what would be your advice to parents and how to turn this around in their kids' minds?
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing about that is that the kids are really already there. A few years ago, we did a ballot campaign in Michigan when I was the HSUS Michigan State Director. It was a citizen ballot referendum campaign to stop a proposed wolf hunt in the state, which was successful. But the amazing thing to see was the young people. And we toured the state and spoke with a lot of young people in elementary schools. And they really get it. They really understand the importance of these wildlife species, particularly wolves, and their importance at the top of the food chain and being, you know, nature's true wildlife managers, and also coyotes and other wildlife species. They understand their role in a healthy ecosystem, and how they shouldn't be killed for no reason, like in a contest or for a trophy or things like that. So in large part, the kids are really ahead of us on this in a lot of ways. I will add, though, that unfortunately, you mentioned that, you know, kids will hear about these contests. In many instances, kids actually are encouraged to participate in these contests. In fact, there was a contest in Utah a couple of years ago that awarded prizes to kids as young as 5 years old. So in the investigations that we have done in states like Virginia and New York and other states around the country, there were actually categories for children to participate in the contest themselves, or children present at the check-ins or weigh-ins that I mentioned, where the piles of bodies are being brought in. The kids are even encouraged to help drag the bodies up to the scale or otherwise be present for this this very gruesome scene. And unfortunately have to witness this very disrespectful treatment of their wildlife.
Yeah, I have seen pictures and videos of this, because that's part of the process of becoming an animal activist, is that you get to research and find out about horrible things that take place, that the way that many people and many groups, even agencies, how they treat animals. I know there are some agencies, and you probably know maybe the Fish and Wildlife Agency, that basically shoot horses from the sky, wild horses, just because it's the law. So my question is to you, it kind of like an opinion. Why do you think there are still people in this country who believe this is something worth doing, even after years of knowledge and proof in the last few years in the form of videos that animals are like us, sentient, meaning they can feel, they can love, they can experience emotions like we do. We see mom animals behave in ways that are just incredible. And I think people in the past 50 years ago, they didn't have this proof in videos, but now we have tons. Why do you think there are still people that hold on to these very outdated modes of thinking?
Well, I would hesitate to try to delve into why someone feels a certain way or why people do what they do. But I can tell you that there are fewer and fewer of people that do believe that. There have been recent landmark studies, like one by Colorado State University called the America's Wildlife Values Project, that found that the attitudes of the public toward wildlife are really changing. And more people take this kind of large, big picture view of wildlife as part of their interconnected network. And fewer look upon wildlife as what they sometimes call a harvest, or I'm sorry, a resource, just to be used for human purposes. So why people believe or do those things, I couldn't really tell you, but I can tell you that fewer and fewer of those people believe that wildlife should be trophy hunted, or that wildlife should be killed in these killing contests, or trapped or killed on fur farms for their fur. Fewer and fewer Americans believe that that is right, and more of them are speaking up against it.
Yeah, I've seen that pattern too, and that does make me feel happy, because I do see the pattern to basically letting go of all these what I call outdated modes of thinking, and it also in understanding the value of our fellow beings, of the wildlife in our ecosystems. It's not just because they're a part of our ecosystem, but they are a very crucial part of our ecosystems. And so I do feel that, you know, young people, like you said before, probably are on a really good spot right now, to take action in that sense. So my next question, many of us in the animal activist community believe animals are equal to us. That's why many of us have decided to not consume meat anymore, because we don't want to participate in the factory farming and the whole industry. And we feel that is highly unethical. And this is all we can do just to start with. So what would you suggest to people who feel like this about animals, about what to do and how to get involved in this type of activism?
Right. Well, I definitely first encourage them to get to know more about the Humane Society of the United States. Our mission is to protect all animals. And we work not just in the U.S., but all around the world with our partners at Humane Society International. But get to know the issues more, and then contact our organization or other organizations in your state. In Oregon, there are many wonderful organizations to protect wildlife, to protect cats and dogs, to protect pets, to protect horses. Whatever it is your passion is, get to know a state or local or national group that can help you to get involved in changing the laws and changing the regulations in your state that govern how animals are treated, how wildlife is treated. So, you know, in this Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting on Friday, Oregon citizens, you know, spoke up. They went and spoke to their policymakers and said, hey, we think this regulation or these laws should change. Can you help us do that? Or there will be laws, new laws or bills coming up in the Oregon legislative session in 2023. So get to know Oregon groups where they will help you speak to your state legislators and ask them to change the laws to better protect wildlife and all animals in your state. So get involved with a good group and start learning how to change the laws and changing regulations to protect animals.
For somebody that's listening in and they really just want to get involved right now because they feel this is such a huge issue, what would be a direct specific point of action? Because you said, yeah, there are tons of nonprofits, tons of wonderful people working in the state to protect animals. Can you give us a specific point of action that we can pass on to anybody listening in?
You could start with us because we're a national organization, but we have state directors in almost every state in the U.S. So if you go to humanesociety.org/state directors, you can find out where our staff are in every state. So, for example, in Oregon, our state director is the wonderful Kelly Peterson. And then you can contact Kelly and say, hey, what can I do to help animals in the state? And she can fill you in on what bill she's going to be pursuing in the Oregon legislature in 2023, how she can get involved with direct animal care, you know, rescuing animals, like you may have heard about the case with all the beagles that we were involved with recently, all the 4,000 beagles rescued from a research breeding facility. You can also alternately just find your local animal shelter. If you go to petfinder.org or other sites like that, you can find out if there's an animal shelter in your community where you can start volunteering to help with the animals in the shelter. So, or you can foster animals from rescue groups. So lots of ways for you to get started. But if you really want to know what's going on at the state level as far as what laws are being changed to help animals, I definitely recommend going to humanesociety.org first and finding out more what's going on right in your own state.
Yeah. So there are many ways that people can get involved and take action now, mm-hmm. from just fostering animals that need a home to reaching out to the humanesociety.org website and connecting to Kelly right here in Oregon.
Yes.
Oh, and other nonprofits, tons of nonprofits in this state. And one of my questions was actually about the beagles, because mm-hmm. this is something that not a lot of people either know or want to deal with, because it's such a sad story, because we know beagles are used for scientific experiments precisely because of their nature. They're docile, they are adorable, they just want to connect. And it's a really sad situation, but they were rescued and that was a major success. Can you tell us about that journey?
Oh boy, you know, that was a different section. I'm in the wildlife department. And so there is so much more that the folks in our animal research issues and our animal rescue team sections could tell you about it. But basically, the beagles were removed from a breeding facility in the southeastern US and immediately began to work with an amazing network of animal shelters and rescues all across the country to start getting these beagles into a safe place and taken care of so that they could be adopted out into loving homes. And so that's a very short version of what happened, but the beagles are all now being taken care of, and you've probably seen some pretty interesting high profile people that have adopted the dogs and everyday citizens all across the country who have stepped up to help these wonderful little dogs.
Yeah, I was very happy to hear about those news, and I knew that it was a different department, but I wanted to hear your thoughts about it. And it is excellent news, and I want anybody right now listening, if you don't know about that beagle project, basically the Humane Society led to rescue thousands of beagles that were basically kept in cages, completely disconnected from regular human connection, basically, then please go and find that out. I just want to ask you, because I know that you love animals. You must, if you do what you do, because it's a lot of work, and not only work, but it's hard work. It's that's when the emotions come in. It's not just a clerical job. It's you put in a lot of your emotional power into it, and it must be hard. Would you please tell us when your journey of animal protection started and what really inspired you? I'm sure you were much younger when that kicked in, and just tell us that.
Yes, much younger. I don't even want to say how many decades ago, but basically I happened to read a pamphlet about the fur trade and how animals are killed in traps and on fur farms for their fur. In particular, electrocution is used to kill animals on fur farms. And it was at that point, it was really a textbook epiphany for me. Like, how did I not know this before? But now that I do know it, you know, there's no going back. So I began to read a couple of really seminal books that talked about other ways in which animals are treated on factory farms, in research laboratories, in the fur industry, and just began to, you know, think about how my role was in all of this and how I wanted to make changes in my life. And also to get involved in activism to try to change that, how animals are treated in our society. Yeah, just reading a lot and making some decisions about how I wanted to change my life.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you have a dog or a cat of your own?
Four cats.
Four cats? And they're very happy and lucky to have you.
Yeah, they're kind of spoiled, I have to admit.
Well, I typically don't even think animals or our animal family can even be spoiled, because we just shower them with all the love and attention that they give us. So I don't know, that's just my thinking. But any thoughts that I can come up with that you would have for our audience here at KBOO and everywhere else?
Boy, I can't. And probably your audience members have already done this, but I would just recommend, you know, trying to seek out some more information about animals and how they're treated, and then learn how to get involved. I can't stress enough, and that's really what we focus on, is changing policy. You know, working with state policymakers and local policymakers at the city, the county, and the state level to improve laws and regulations to protect animals from cruelty.
So get involved, and we're on the right path. Although things might not be as perfect as we would like, we are on the right path. I just want to make sure anybody listening that feels like, oh my goodness, how can these contests keep happening? Why is this happening? Well, there are tons of people like you, tons of people that are working hard every day, and they're not particularly famous or well-known, but you are heroes. And I just want to tell you, on behalf of the KBOO community, that your work is highly valued. We just love what you do because it's so crucial for us to move forward and just let go of this toxic relationship that we seem to be having with the animal kingdom throughout the world. It's not just us. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for your work here in Oregon and over there in Minnesota. And I know that you're not going to give up. And we need people like you working at the state level, at that level, which is a lot more complicated, and do what you need to do to protect our fellow beings. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Roger Fisher from HEART. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Tell your friends to listen on in and support the mass movement of the human tribe.
Hello, dear KBOO community. As you can see, we are back on the air. However, we still have a power outage issue, so we cannot have live programming right now, but we will keep you updated. Next, we will play for you an episode of Encouragementology, where Kendall Boyson will talk about evaluating what's working and what's not. Thank you so much for supporting KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, it's time for a reality check as we wind down and take a step back to evaluate what's working and what's not. What's the definition of insanity? Oh yeah, doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different result. It's time to take charge and get real. There's another saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But when is the last time you looked under the hood? Nope. This year, we're not leaving anything to chance, but instead taking a proactive approach as we take an honest deep dive into our lives. Sometimes it's hard to get a good perspective when you're so close to the subject, i.e. ourselves. So we'll consult some experts, relate with some stories, pull our vantage point back to get the bigger picture, and make a commitment to embrace change. See if you relate. I'm guilty of putting my head down and barreling toward a project or idea with just sheer will. I feel like reward and success come from hard work instead of admitting to myself strategy plays a pretty critical role. Like diet and exercise, they go hand in hand and rarely work alone. But the strategy part can be confusing and is where self-doubt enters the picture. Push square into round hole. Twist, try again, push harder, you get the picture. Strategy takes time, some research, evaluation, and patience, but the payoff surpasses the exercise. Heather Tim helps us with how to evaluate your life and change it if needed, found at courageousandmindful.com. Are you feeling fed up with the way your life's going? Have you been struggling with the what's the point thought and uncomfortable emotions? There's a beautiful thing about feelings. They tell you something is up. What's even more beautiful about them is they spur you into some decisions. Whether that decision is to do something different or not, that's entirely up to you. Sometimes we experience a moment of awareness that has us stop and evaluate the way things are going. Whether it's a thought, an emotion, or the realization that you possess a spirit that won't settle. At some point, we experience the need to stop and evaluate. So here are some questions to help you. What am I happy with? We start with this question because, let's face it, when we're evaluating or reevaluating our lives, it's because we're not happy. But it also doesn't mean that everything in our life is going wrong either. We sometimes forget to remember the things that are going right. So, what are the things in your life that you're happy with? These can be things that you wouldn't change, or if you were to change, would make you more comfortable. But what if you don't know the answer to this question? What if you're sitting there going, "Hello, I have no idea what makes me happy. That's why I'm listening to this." Well, you're in luck, because we're going to talk about that. I'm going to go out on another limb and assume that you're a human that's alive, and the society that you've grown up with has a few ideas of what happiness should look like when you're thinner or toned or more muscular, or you have all of those things. Your checking and savings account has more zeros in it than a negative sign. Your home has more square footage that lets in natural sunlight with beautiful yards. Visualize a better homes and gardens. You get that promotion or degree or whatever it is to add more zeros to your accounts. Maybe it's when you're in a committed relationship and have kiddos or intend to have them. And perhaps some of these things might make you happier. Exercising regularly releases feel-good chemicals into the brain that makes us happier, and having connections with others tends to make us happier too. But there's also more to life. So how do we find it? First, take notice when you're really happy and jot it down with good notes. I'm talking about those times when you're thinking, "This is amazing, wonderful, great, and life needs more of this." Those are the moments that you need to be writing down with all the details. I think we forget when we experience these moments because they're sometimes pretty brief. Get out there and experiment. Take notice of those moments when you close your eyes and inhale the scent of your favorite coffee and think, "Ah, yes." Or the times that you turn your face towards the warmth of the sun and you close your eyes, you know, so you don't go blind. And let yourself grin. Or when you're cooking yourself alive in the bath or shower and wishing the hot water would never run out. Now, let's dissect those moments to figure out what it is about them that makes them happy. What is it about them that brings pleasure? Are there sensory elements that make them pleasurable? Do these moments give me time to myself or time to spend with others? Do I feel recharged afterward? What about when you were a kid? Before society told you that it wasn't cool to do that, what did you used to enjoy doing? Did you used to love to play in the mud? What about finger painting? Legos? Watching Disney movies? So now, what makes you happy? What is the life that I've always dreamed about? Odds are your dream life might incorporate some of the stuff that you've already identified in number one. So what's different? Imagine waking up excited to go to work. Now, where do you work? What are you doing for work? Is it what you're doing now, or is it something different? But also, let me ask you, is your dream job actually about doing something that you dream about, or is it about running away from your current life? What about your home? Are you living in the house that you've always dreamed about? If yes, then congrats, that's awesome. If not, you may need to evaluate your budget or find ways to turn it into your dream home. When you can articulate what your dreams look like, you can start to finesse out the goals needed to make it happen. Sometimes we think our dream life is impossible, and we literally make it impossible. Our dreams can seem so big that they're difficult to verbalize without breaking them into smaller pieces. Figure out what it is that you really, really want, and what makes this dream so great. Does time feel like the enemy? Then it's time to take control of your time. I seriously recommend keeping a log for at least a week of what you're doing with your time. This is the only resource that we cannot get back. Fortunes can be won and lost and won again, but time, once that second minute or hour hand moves to the right, is officially gone. How much time are you spending doing things that you don't enjoy doing or that are unnecessary? And is it necessary that you keep doing these things? And if so, do you need to keep them going for the entirety of your life? Or maybe there might be some other options out there. If you're working ridiculous hours with little to no breathing room, you're going to be exhausted and miserable. Are you in survival mode? And if you are, what is your plan for getting out? Or are you doing tasks that could be delegated to others in order to create more time? So you can use time more intentionally. Do you have jobs that you took on believing that you could handle them, only to discover that you're getting buried beneath them? These extra tasks can get in the way and cause misery. If you can delegate out tasks, then by all means, delegate them out and use your newfound time with intention. Or perhaps you're just wasting time. How much time do you spend on social media? Pinterest, that's a black hole. Or how many hours do you lose spending time playing games? You have to set boundaries. There's nothing wrong with downtime or fun time, but when it starts to eat up hours of your time, it can be the exact opposite. It no longer feels pleasant and enjoyable, but can instead feel like a waste of your time. What makes you unhappy? This question is probably easier to answer than the first question. What were your most unhappy moments in the last 7 days or the last 30 days? What were you doing, thinking, or where were you when you were most unhappy? Are you spending time with people that you don't enjoy being around? Is it the realization that you're not living the life that you want to live? Or is it your weight or how you feel about yourself? Are you living life fearlessly? Are you living life fearlessly, or are you living someone else's life? Is fear the thing that's holding you back? Have you given fear the power to decide your future? If the answer is yes, then here's some good news. Fear is an emotion. It's not a fact 99% of the time. So now that you know the good news, let's talk a bit about fear. We tend to use emotional reasoning when we let fear make decisions outside of those that involve mortal danger. Unfortunately, we also tend to entertain worst-case scenarios that allow thoughts to run amok and other people's opinions to take priority. As a result, fear can be pretty insidious, and before you know it, you're living someone else's life. I think an important consideration is that there are different phases of life, and if you apply phase one thinking to all of them, you aren't evolving or taking advantage of what life has to offer. Minivan thinking when the soccer games are over. Have you been liberated from a demanding phase of life and been given permission to self-nurture and self-care, but missed the memo because you're stuck in phase one thinking? Put down the PBJ and grab the bubble bath. It's time you take a well-deserved break. If you don't take the time to self-evaluate, you miss the natural transition periods that help you organically graduate through life. Chinger Lee shares the Wheel of Life, a self-assessment tool to find out what is not working in your life, found at medium.com. You will not be effective in changing your life if you don't identify the problem. The first step is always to understand what things are not working inside you and in your life. At times, it could be too overwhelming, so nothing works better than a good old pencil and paper. So grab yours now. This is a
fabulous teaching tool and great for coaching. So I'm going to give you a moment. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, you got it? Okay. Basically, what you want to do is draw a circle, okay? Big circle. If you've got an 8.5 by 11, make it a big circle. Maybe turn it landscape style. Now, divide it into 8 sections, like 8 pieces of pie. Okay, go ahead. For those of you that are challenged at geometry, I'll give you a moment. Okay, now I'm going to give you the 8 section titles. So pick a pie and get started. Health. Relationships. Environment. Career. Money. Personal growth. Brightness of life. And spirituality. We're going to use this to self-assess each sector of your life by giving it a value on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being a complete disaster and 10 being, wow, this is awesome. Be honest with yourself and give an accurate value which will adequately represent your satisfaction with each aspect. So let's get started. Number 1, health. In this section, you need to evaluate the way you feel, your appearance, how you look, mobility, how much you move throughout the day, mood, walks, how much time do you spend on fresh air, energy, nutrition, regimen, sport, or sleep. So take a moment and evaluate your health on a scale of 1 to 10. Where do you see your health? Number 2, relationships. How satisfied and fulfilled are you with the quality of relationships in your life? Your communication with others, your friendships, your love, maybe with your partner, your family. How close are you to your family? Take a moment and think about your relationships. Where would you put that on a scale of 1 to 10? Are you perfectly satisfied with all your relationships, or is there room to improve? Number 3, environment. Your physical environment includes your surroundings, your relatives, colleagues, acquaintances, your neighbors, even your opponents. Think about your environment. Who is right around you? How are those relationships within your environment? On a scale of 1 to 10, let's rate that section. Number 4, your career. How satisfied are you with the work you're doing for a living? Your job, your career strategy, your business, your profession, the time investment into your career, your social status, your title. Take a moment and think about how satisfied you are with your career on a scale of 1 to 10. Let's think about money, expenses, income, life conditions. When you think about your money, how satisfied are you? Is this something that needs to grow, or are you where you wanted to be? Number 6, personal growth. Do you have enough time for self-development? How satisfied are you with your personal growth, education, coaching, special training, life's journey, personal growth, reading? Take a step back and evaluate your personal growth. This might have been a year for growth, and yet, maybe not. Number 7, brightness of life. What is the quality of emotions you get from your life? What are the activities to make your life brighter? Entertainment, relaxation, hobby, traveling, impressions, fun. Let's think about that on a scale of 1 to 10. Where are you with the brightness of life? And number 8, spiritual life. Do you have a religion? Do you work on your spirituality? Do you express your spirit in art? What are your beliefs when it comes to religion, spiritual practices, meditations, belief, art? Where are you with your satisfaction on your spiritual life? Let's rate it 1 to 10. There you go. If you did everything correctly, you should have drawn a wheel of life. As you can see, they're in a certain order for a reason. Health is the basement for everything. If you lack health, your relationships will suffer. Your career will suffer, consequently decreasing your income. With no money, you can't travel. You can't afford to have time for personal growth, and you definitely won't think about spiritual life when, for example, you have nothing to eat. As you see, everything is interconnected. Your number one priority is to make it as round as possible. If your wheel is all crooked, you will logically feel lots of bumps on the road. If you want to have a smooth and pleasant ride, you need to harmonize the wheel by working hard on your weak sectors. Think about the actions you need to take in order to improve the quality of your life. For instance, maybe your health is depleted. How about starting a morning jog, cold showers, going to the gym, eating clean? Maybe it's your relationships that are suffering. Maybe you need to find a new partner, make a romantic dinner, buy a gift for your significant, take your parents to dinner. Could be your environment. How about have lunch with a colleague, help your neighbor, go to new places in the city? It could be money. Maybe you need to save, collect, return debts. Your number two priority is the scale of the wheel. The scale of your life and the intensity of your experiences is directly proportional to the values you've just written on your wheel. Your next objective is to improve on the degree of satisfaction in any of those areas. Make sure you do things that add up to value in your life. Remember that everything is temporary. The way reveals itself under the feet of a walking man. Idleness is deadly. The determination is conquering. I love this exercise. How many of us start the new year thinking all we need to do to be happy and progress is to lose 10 pounds and start a new exercise routine? You dump all the holiday leftovers, purchase the celery and meat sticks, peruse the internet for the best gym special, and ta-da, you're back on track. Day 15, and you realize there might be more to the story. Maybe the pie you should have been consuming is on the wheel of life, and it's entitled relationships or spirituality. Maybe you're run down and depressed because you're depleted in more than just fiber and iron. Don't you worry. The holiday cookies are already in the trash, and my Carbavoid diet is being activated as we speak. But I'm also taking a look at the entire wheel. For success and sustainability, I will need to address what else is suffering. Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo helps us understand how to make your resolutions a reality. 5 ways to make changes that stick. Found at psychologytoday.com. Whether it's a New Year resolution or a resolution for new you at any time of the year, sustained change can be difficult. One study found that 24% of people had dropped their resolutions by the time February rolled around, and by 6 months, over half of the people had given up. Luckily, it's not impossible to change your ways. And the best way to make that change? Drop the perfectionism and be better than perfect. Perfectionism, or that all-or-nothing mentality, gets in the way of maintained changes. Perfectionism sounds something like this. I had one cookie and ruined my diet, so might as well eat the rest of the plate. I don't have time to meditate as long as I want to, so I'm not going to do it at all. I can't afford a gym membership, so I can't work out. This all-or-nothing mindset gets in the way of you making progress. The antidote to perfectionism, however, is not to give up. Giving up is actually a symptom of perfectionism. Instead, be better than perfect. Being better than perfect means you focus on the change that you want and why you want it. You take steps towards the goal, celebrating each step in the right direction. What's more, you stop judging yourself when you make a mistake. So here are 5 ways to make sustained changes by being better than perfect. Number 1, focus on your why. Frequently, when people are making a change, they focus on what they don't like about it. If your resolution is to exercise, you may focus on how much you hate running or going to the gym. The secret, however, is to focus on what you want to make the change. What are the benefits of making this change? Consider psychological, physical, relationship, purpose, work, spirituality. For example, exercise has been shown to be a great way to release stress and decrease depression. That's good for your psychological health. Regarding your physical health, exercise can help you not only lose weight and tone up your body, but also help you fight infection by boosting your immune system. Number 2, it's not failure, it's data. People often give up on a resolution or change when they revert back to their old ways. Maybe your resolution is to be more organized, and yet you realize at the end of the week that your desk is just as messy as always. Instead of beating yourself up and proclaiming this will never work, use the situation as data, information that you can learn from to make positive changes. For example, if your desk is a mess, you may want to set a reminder every afternoon to take 5 minutes and clean it up. Take and celebrate even small steps. People often bite off huge goals for a resolution. Perhaps it's to lose a significant amount of weight, or to never eat sugar again, or to never fight with your partner. While these are certainly wonderful aspirations, they are significant changes. The way to get to the top of the Empire State Building is not in one big step. There are a lot of steps that go into it. For you, celebrate each step in the right direction, and even if you revert to your old ways, try again. Don't have time for 20 minutes of meditation? Take 5 deep breaths. Hate going to the gym? Try an exercise video on YouTube. Don't have the money to eat fresh organic vegetables? Choose 1 or 2 that you'll incorporate in your diet this week. Number 4, schedule it. Sure, it sounds like a great idea to have a goal of lessening your stress, but how can you actually do it? The key is to figure out actionable steps and then schedule them. Perhaps you choose to wake up 10 minutes early to meditate, or maybe you set a reminder mid-morning when you tend to be more stressed to stop and take 5 breaths. And number 5, get an accountability partner. Choose someone to whom you will be accountable, whether it's your partner, a friend, or a coach. Sure, you may want to make the change, but when you're accountable to someone else, you're more likely to stick with a new behavior. Oh my goodness, the all or nothing thinking is in my very fiber and how I'm wired. Knowing how you're hardwired is important to making changes in your behavior. This is the part of getting real with yourself. You have to know your limitations. You may not be able to have one cookie, one cigarette, or one glass of wine. You may not be able to socially drink or to take up baking as a new hobby. The day I found moderation versus abstinence in a magazine article was the day I met part of my brain circuitry. Why it's easier for me to say no instead of just a little, and how some people could never go without but can moderate their intake successfully. This made total sense to me and described to a T the feeling that I was having. Once you come to terms with what you think and why, you can start working with your brain and your body in a more harmonious way. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit Encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, take the time to get to know you, the real you, what is working and what is not, so that you can work together and make the necessary changes to transition into the next phase of life. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Dear KBOO community, as you can see, we are back on the air. However, at the moment, we're still